Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 16th. And it's back to school for most Wisconsin school kids today following the Martin Luther King holiday. And while they get back to the three R's, you can bet officials at the State Department of Public Instruction will be mulling over a court ruling handed down on Friday that ordered them to write more specific rules for how Wisconsin school districts identify gifted and talented students. The suit was brought before a Dane County court by a new Glarus parent who argued that services for gifted children are in danger because of school budget constraints and efforts to raise test scores among lower performing students. Advocates for more specific rules for gifted education wanted the parents of gifted students to be able to challenge school districts that may not be providing appropriate or adequate services. The advocates for gifted education didn't get everything they sought from the court, but still considered the order to DPI to write more specific rules to identify gifted students a victory. Our first guest will tell us why this is important to gifted and talented students and to gifted and talented education. And after 6:30, a guest education professor will talk about the broader implications of what this might mean for gifted and talented programs in Wisconsin school districts. And we will wonder what your reactions and questions are. No doubt your child or grandchild is gifted and talented. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. If you're in Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our first guest this morning is Tom Zeegan, president of the Wisconsin Association for Talented and Gifted, who is also a learning coordinator for the Wauwatosa School District. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Now, your association didn't bring this suit to court, but did file a friend of the court brief supporting the parent, Todd Palmer?
That's correct. We did file an amicus brief on behalf of gifted students within the state.
Yeah, why did you do that?
Our position as a statewide nonprofit organization is to advocate for what we believe is in the best interest of gifted students and their parents. And we do believe that with services and programming having been cut so severely, so drastically in the last 5 or 6 years because of revenue cuts, because of budget constraints. In fact, we know that 60 to 65% of districts have cut programming or resources in the last 5 to 6 years, that without this ruling, we wouldn't have the legal ground to stand on in terms of making sure that districts do comply with a DPI mandate, and that's called Standard T, which says we should, as districts, all be identifying and programming for gifted students.
Yeah, so you got the identifying, but not so much the programming from this suit.
That's correct. As far as the Judge Nowakowski ruling, he did put in place that the identification must be consistent throughout the state, but he did say that he felt that it was important and that it should be brought up through the legislature.
Yeah. What is the problem with identifying the rules right now that the DPI has for identifying gifted students?
Right. There are some very broad guidelines to identify students in each district in either intellectual ability, and that would be the general intellectual or specific academic, and then it could also be leadership, creativity, and or one of the arts, and students can be identified in any one of those five. But as far as how to do that is left at this point strictly up to each district to decide. Now, one of the problems with that is that when students do go from one district to another, you can have a student who's been identified, programmed for appropriately in one district, move to another district and not qualify. Or because of districts having lost so much money and cut in programming that they simply don't have the services or even the identification in place. This will guarantee that.
Yeah, this will, it won't, though, guarantee specific programs. The DPI has not been ordered to tell local school districts this is the type of programming that you need to have.
That's correct. It does not tell the districts what kind of programming. It does say there must be programming, mm-hmm. and it must be appropriate programming. So that'll still be something that districts must comply with, and if not, parents would have the school board specifically to answer, or would want the school boards to specifically answer to them as to what they are doing for their children.
So you're happy with this ruling then?
I think that it's definitely a positive step.
Yeah. Why is this so important?
Well, again, if we know that gifted students are the pipeline of talent to the future. They're the best and the brightest students. And without them getting the appropriate programming and meeting their unique learning needs, they can underachieve. They can go underground. They can literally regress in their learning. So it's vital that we give them the education that they need to be nurtured and to grow as the fine learners that they are.
Yeah, and it's your fear that this is happening right now, that these talented and gifted students are underachieving or going underground and not getting the education they should or deserve?
Absolutely depends on the student and what resources are available. I see some of them just absolutely flying high, and that's very, you know, that truly is what's exciting and the joy of working with gifted students. There are some districts that are struggling simply because they don't have the resources. And the ultimate effect of not having the resources in the district is that students are going to suffer, right?
We are talking with Tom Zeegan. He is president of the Wisconsin Association for Talented and Gifted. We're talking about a Dane County court ruling on Friday saying that the DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, must write more specific rules for Wisconsin school districts to identify gifted and talented students. We wonder if you agree this is needed. Do you share our guest concerns that gifted and talented kids are at some risk because school districts are cutting programs? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 18 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Tuesday, January the 16th, and we're talking about gifted and talented education in Wisconsin, specifically talking about a court ruling that was handed down on Friday by a Dane County judge that ordered the DPI to write more specific rules to identify gifted and talented students. We wonder what you think about this ruling. We wonder if you're concerned about the state of gifted and talented education in Wisconsin. What's a school district to do, though, if it doesn't have the money to provide this kind of programming? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Surprised that we have open lines on this. Normally, when we talk about this topic, there's a lot of interest out there because a lot of you seem to be concerned about the education that perhaps your child or grandchild is receiving, believing that your child or grandchild is indeed gifted and talented, but not getting the type of programming that he or she deserves. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We're talking in this half hour with Tom Zeegan, who is president of the Wisconsin Association for Talented and Gifted, which filed a friend of the court brief in this case. And I'm wondering, Tom Zeegan, what now are the practical implications of this ruling? Now, how will this better gifted education in Wisconsin?
My understanding is that the DPI has basically 2 weeks to put together the specifics for how districts are to identify students, and we'll know more within these next 2 weeks as to what that looks like. Having said that, districts do have some sort of guidelines already that they have individually created. This will simply make the guidelines more and the ruling or the rules more specific. Once we have the identification in place, we're able to write more and more appropriate programming for those students within the districts. And what we want to do is make sure that students who are gifted remain challenged, that they're able to explore their passions, and that they're able to really do the best work possible at the greatest depth of their understanding.
Yeah, well, why can't the student, be challenged and pursue passions and learn adequately with a typical education rather than a special gifted program?
Well, with good instruction, they do, and really that's the premise and the basis and the kernel of how to work with all students, whether they're gifted or not, is just the appropriate instruction, meeting and matching the appropriate need of the learner, whether they're special needs or gifted and talented. You want to just match the instruction to the student's needs. Once they're identified, we're able to know, especially if they move from district to district or building to building, what those needs are and in what areas, so we wouldn't waste important instructional time getting to know the student or finding out what resources would be best for that student.
Yeah. Is this pitting gifted and talented students against special needs students?
No, not at all, because I think it's very analogous in that gifted and talented and special needs students are each unique learners, and they're all in need of appropriate matches in their instruction to whatever their needs are. So it really is putting them more on a level, I think, the same playing field as special needs students.
Yeah, but if a school district is faced with budget constraints and is forced to cut programs, there's not a lot of discretionary things to cut, is there?
There's not a lot of discretionary things, and so what's happened is that we wouldn't want any students to suffer, and because there's no federal money or mandate that goes along with gifted education as it does with special ed, this is something that has to be addressed state by state. I think only Pennsylvania has addressed it at a state level, and that's because gifted and talented students in Pennsylvania are under the same mandate as special needs students. So the ruling here in Wisconsin is unusual in that they're not classified in the same category as special needs here as they are in Pennsylvania, but this is still, I think, the only other state where this sort of ruling has occurred.
Yeah. It says here that the parent who filed this suit, he is also an attorney, Todd Palmer, argued that services for gifted children are in danger because of school budget constraints, which we talked about. You said, what, 60 to 65% of Wisconsin school districts have cut their gifted and talented programs?
Right. The Wisconsin School Boards Association and the Wisconsin and WEAC both did a survey, I believe, 2 years ago, and the alarming results is that of the effects of revenue cuts was that gifted and talented services, programming, and resources were being cut more than any other area to the tune of, I believe, at that point 2 years ago, it was 62% had been cut within the last 5 years.
Yeah, but it also says that they also Palmer and others were arguing that gifted education was suffering because of the concentration of effort to raise proficiency levels among low-performing students.
I think the issue there is that the No Child Left Behind law, which mandates high-stakes testing for all students, has really little impact or worth for gifted students who come into the testing arena already at proficiency or advanced standards. Their ability to test isn't the issue. It's already been documented. And the testing itself does nothing educationally for them.
Well, let's take some calls. We have Margie and Butternut first. Hi, Margie, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to comment on this. I have a grandson who I feel is very intelligent. I don't know that he's gifted in the sense that you are talking about, but one of the things that we've experienced is that his teacher will actually call him on the carpet if he does something above and beyond what his assignment was. And that's of concern to me because I feel like he's not as challenged as he should be.
So, I mean, does he get a regular assignment and he goes above and beyond and she'll publicly reprimand him for that?
That's correct.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very encouraging, Tom Zeegan.
Well, it doesn't, does it? Because we want to always encourage students to do the best work possible, and that would seem to be a good conversation to have with the teacher.
Yeah. Cynthia in Duluth, Minnesota is with us now. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. I was just wondering, and I'd like the speaker to talk a little bit more about how the gifted and talented kids are identified. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, I guess how they currently are identified and how that might change with this ruling?
Right. The current status is somewhat different in each district, and the ruling that's going to come down now is going to provide some consistency. For general intellectual, I think we're really looking at 97% of and above in terms of the norm, so probably the top 3%, a high percentage performing students.
That's
there.
That's on academic scores
on
or whatever.
Right, yeah. on nationally normed tests. And then as far as academic-specific academic areas, we'd be looking at the kids who are scoring at the top, perhaps 3 to 5% academic specifics. Then there are different tests for creativity, leadership, or any of the arts.
And this would be changed in that it would just be consistent throughout all of Wisconsin, that if it's you're in the 97 percentile or whatever, then you're getting
right. If that's what comes down from this ruling.
Yeah. Okay, almost at the end of the hour, but we have Mike in Black Earth with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I was on a school board not that long ago when we had to reduce due to expenses, and we cut that program. And it was a tough decision. But one thing we concluded at the time was that teachers should be able to work with a child who is, cut above the average, and at least in terms of eager to learn, and by a combination of independent study and a little academic freedom, should be able to work with that kid. And I know that doesn't justify the cut, but at the same time, I think I came to the conclusion that, by segregating people out and saying, okay, you're all gifted students, you can all go over here and learn differently, I didn't think that was necessarily healthy for the kids either. And so that's what I wanted to say.
I'm glad you called, Mike. That's what typically would happen in a school district, Tom Zagan, that the gifted students are pulled away from the other students?
They should not be, actually. Best research would show that they should be clustered but not tracked. They should be in a whole group setting, and the instruction should be differentiated. And I think the key word that Mike used was should. Certainly teachers should be able to, and all teachers should ideally be teachers of the gifted, but without proper instruction, resources, and training, they're not. So proper staff development is crucial, and that's what's been going undone or coming undone in the last few years.
Yeah. With only 30 seconds to go, Mike says, teachers can give the students some independent study extra
independent
credits.
Independent study is one thing to do. But without proper instruction in terms of differentiated instruction, we risk losing the pipeline of talent to the future.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Tom Zagan, president of the Wisconsin Association for Talented and Gifted. He is also a learning coordinator for the Wauwatosa School District, talking with us about a Dane County court ruling that was handed down on Friday saying that the DPI must write more specific rules for Wisconsin school districts in order for them to identify gifted and talented students. We'll talk with an education professor about this after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 6:36 now on this Tuesday, January the 16th. And we'll continue talking about a Dane County court ruling on Friday that advocates of gifted and talented education are calling a victory. The judge ruled that the State Department of Public Instruction must write more specific rules for how Wisconsin school districts identify gifted and talented students. However, the judge rejected a request from the parent who brought the suit that the DPI also create rules detailing exactly what programs local school districts have to provide gifted students, and also rejected a request that school districts, or that the DPI, that is, provide more vigorous enforcement of its standards. We talked in our last half hour with the president of a gifted and talented association that filed a friend of the court brief in the case. And in this half hour, we will talk more about the implications of the ruling and the state of gifted and talented education in Wisconsin with a guest professor of education. And we will welcome your questions and comments about this at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890-263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Do you consider this good news that the DPI must create these specific rules detailing how to identify a gifted and talented student in Wisconsin? Are you concerned about the state of gifted and talented education in this state? We heard from our guest in the last half hour that 60 to 65% of school districts under budget constraints have cut back on or even eliminated these programs. And our guest said that this is not good for education in Wisconsin, that lots of smart kids are underachieving or would go underground and not achieve their fullest potential because of this. What do you think? We welcome your questions and comments for our guest, who is Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So do you think this court ruling is a big deal, that it will somehow improve gifted and talented programs offered by school districts in Wisconsin?
Well, I think that one of the results of this ruling may be a mixed victory and sort of part of the idea of be careful what you wish for because you might get it. And what may result in this is some districts will, of course, be able to ramp up their programs and be able to meet these guidelines that I'm positive right now DPI is scratching their heads trying to say, okay, how do we do this in 2 weeks? That is a tall order, and the judge may revisit that. But the idea, though, is that the DPI does have to provide more specific standards. Right now, they really have more guidelines. They're very broad. There's a lot of may. There's a lot of suggestions on what to do. But one of the results of this may be that districts decide, wow, we've got to fund No Child Left Behind issues. We have to fund by ADA, Americans with Disabilities Special Needs Programs, very proper. I don't know that we can open a third front of funding. Boy, we're just going to forget our ad hoc, serendipitous, talented and gifted programs and let those go. They may not be able to afford that. So, you know, this may not work out well for everybody.
So the school districts would indeed have that option. This court ruling doesn't say you must have a program. It just says you must, the DPI must tell you how to identify a student who's gifted.
Absolutely. Well, and not only with that, what this is also saying is that if this becomes an expected and official state program, now we're going to have guidelines for who can teach in this program, who can be certified to teach in this program, who has an appropriate license, what are the leadership, what are the, you know, the administrative expertise that people must have. So this is laying a level of bureaucracy on programs that to now have often been led by experienced teachers with driving passion and perhaps some advanced training or graduate course expertise. Perhaps they've attended conferences, but we don't have specific exact certification guidelines and license issues for talented and gifted areas. So this may, boy, you know, this may really be a Pandora's box. And again, some districts may decide, whoa, we just cannot afford this.
Yeah.
And so you may have actually a splint, an increased splintering of haves and have-nots. Rural districts are going to find this very difficult to comply with just because, again, level of expertise, extra pay. Some of the tonier suburban districts probably are going to comply with this fairly well and with relative ease.
Yeah, and that was the the parent who brought the suit wanted more than just this identification issue addressed, didn't get everything he was asking for. But what you're saying is that this isn't going to stem this tide of 60% to 65% of Wisconsin school districts cutting back on these programs.
Oh, no, because, again, talented and gifted is not part of special education in the state of Wisconsin. It is in some other states. So it's as abusive as it might sound, talented and gifted students are not considered an abused species and an abused group. So therefore, they're not subject to protections. And this is a group that oftentimes comes from more privileged backgrounds. Of course, they're not supposed to. Theoretically, it's supposed to be a group that is identified simply by their expertise or their ability to be identified on some basic instruments or assessment techniques. But that's really not the case.
I'm wondering, Professor Correa, if you just have some general thoughts on whether because school districts are told that they have to, you know, be concerned about this No Child Left Behind stuff and ADA stuff, that gifted and talented kids, this pipeline of talent that our guest in the last half hour referred to them as, are underachieving, are going underground, are being lost, and we're not achieving their full potential because of this.
That is possible. It is certainly possible. The problem is we don't have any evidence to any of this. And so we're all talking with anecdotal evidence. And certainly we could make as good of a case for, well, maybe we should spend more attention for those kids that perform in the middle because, you know, does a rising tide raise all boats? Oftentimes, though, what the distinctive part of talented and gifted programs are, you know, it's the squeaky wheel gets the grease. The parents are strong advocates for these children, and that's wonderful. But these are parents that are also tend to be very politically savvy, politically involved, and these are the parents that get the ear of boards and superintendents, and they've been very successful in many cases. Now, I think in this New Glarus case, this was there was unevenness, and this parent recognized that terrific unevenness and wanted to have some specificity brought to that. But, again, probably it makes sense that gifted and talented students should be challenged. Who has a problem with that?
Right.
But, boy, how do we do it? That's the question.
Well, we did hear from, and by the way, we have full lines, so I'll get to those calls in just a moment. But we did hear from a caller in our last half hour from Black Earth, who said he was a former school board member who was involved with the decision there to cut the gifted and talented programs because they were so expensive. And they were under budget constraints, and he said that they figured that the teacher could deal with these you know, gifted and talented kids by offering, you know, some independent study and giving the kids above and beyond stuff to do and guidance along those lines. I'm wondering if is that how these programs generally work anyway?
Well, the programs can be uneven. Now, by uneven, that doesn't, and that's not pejorative, but they can be across the board. The programs that I'm the most familiar with in northeastern Wisconsin are exceptional. These are amazingly dedicated teachers because it's so motivated to work with students that are thinking on such higher conceptual levels. They have pull-out programs, and then some programs that, in my opinion, are much less successful, where the gifted and talented expert works with classroom teachers. Classroom teachers are already feeling a terrific burden to deal with all of the needs that they have to deal with. And a lot of classroom teachers aren't very wild about now a gifted and talented teacher coming in and telling them how to teach while I'm teaching my students. That's a little uneven. It's sort of like having a physician have somebody look over their shoulder all the time. Some accept it, and then others are just, ooh. And again, we don't have a lot of consistency with how that works. Teaching tends to be a very solitary enterprise. And so to have someone come in and let you know, oh, you're fine with those middle kids, but let me help you with the high achievers. We all got to get a little offended at that.
Our guest is Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking with us about the state of gifted and talented education in Wisconsin and a court ruling on Friday dealing with gifted and talented education. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your questions and comments for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 12 minutes before 7 o'clock right now. We're talking with Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, about a court ruling on Friday where a Dane County judge ordered the DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, that it needs to write more specific rules for how local school districts should identify gifted and talented students. Our first caller is Kevin in McFarland. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having a call. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Michigan where I participated in what was called PAGE, a program for academically gifted education. And I'm a huge advocate of programs like that just because I think it keeps kids interested in school. And the program I was in from 5th through 8th grade, one day a week we had to make up our classes, but we were pulled out and got to participate in this program where we experienced a lot of different things, and I found it very challenging. And it really kept school from becoming mundane. I've talked to others that participated in the program when we were growing up, when I would go home, and it's just amazing that we stayed interested in school, and most of us looked forward to that opportunity to get out of the classroom and be challenged. And then there was a challenge throughout the week to catch back up on our coursework. So I don't see that in the schools that my son's went to school here, although he's always identified as the top of his class, and I see him getting bored. And that's unfortunate for those kids to be punished for being above average.
Yeah, so Kevin, there's no such gifted and talented program at all in the schools that your son's been in?
Well, he lives with his mother, and there's not in the school that he goes to now.
Yeah.
In Texas, he participated in the program, and I just saw his interest in school just take off. And since we've lived in the state for about 6 years, that's not necessarily been the case. It's dependent on teacher to teacher.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Kevin. Professor Correa, a reaction to that?
Yeah, I think that's, with all respect, that's a very traditional type of talented and gifted program, and I think he identified a lot of the wonderful features of that. Students look so forward to that half day or one day out of the traditional classroom because their divergent thinking skills are recognized and incubated and encouraged and rewarded, and it's fun, and they get to do neat projects, and, oh, you know, very, very motivating. Now, as you pull back from that for a second, you sort of think, wow, wouldn't all kids like that? Wouldn't all kids really find that motivating? And, of course, the answer is yes. Those are very expensive programs. You need to have a teacher. They need to have a curriculum. And here's the real kicker. They need to have space for that. So it has to be a dedicated classroom that's not part of that regular school activity with music and art and cafeteria and gym and science. And so those tend to be difficult to find that. Sometimes it's the cubbyhole behind the boilers in the janitor's area. It could be a variety of things. But those are great programs. They tend to work well. He did mention one thing, though, that, of course, is the other side of the coin with this, and that is those students often then are held responsible for making up what goes on back in the classroom. And that's a mixed blessing, too, because, gee, I was working. Why now do I have to do double? And talented and gifted programming is not, oh, we'll give you more worksheets. We'll give you extra state capitals to identify. So, frankly, we're still not quite sure always what kind of activities we should engage these students in. But he identified great examples. It's very motivating. And I think, frankly, it would be for any child.
Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Angie in Stevens Point. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is this question is specifically related to the identification of gifted and talented, and it has to do with twice exceptional children, and if you have any comments on that. And I think that I'm curious to see if this ruling will have any impact on those children, and twice exceptional being those who have really high abilities in one area, but actually, in fact, are delayed in another area, and they cancel each other out, so they don't get anything. And essentially, they begin to fail in school. If you would comment on that, I will take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Angie. I'm glad you defined that, because I didn't know what that meant.
That's a really great question. Mm. I think one of the things that the judge was discussing here is that there's terrific unevenness in the state of Wisconsin in terms of DPI guidelines of how we identify these gifted and talented students. And not the districts aren't doing that. Some districts are doing that. An example of this may be, I think there has to be consistency with standardized tests. What type of standardized tests would be used? What type of IQ tests or that type of a thing? What would be the observations and recommendations of classroom teachers? There have to be consistent instruments, for example, with that. But I believe her name was Angie, brought up a really great point. What if a child is exceptionally strong in one area but not in another? Now, an example of it may be a phenomenal reader at kindergarten is going to blow away any type of standardized test and be labeled as gifted because, mm-hmm. my gosh, they're performing. However, most evidence shows that by later elementary school, they've blended back in with the pack. However, if you have a fifth grader that is picking up a violin and being able to pick up multiple languages simply orally by mm-hmm. strong auditory, whoa. However, the whoa is the issue here because we don't have guidelines in the state consistent about how to identify those. And it's the unevenness of gifted that the teachers in it find just so fascinating because this isn't a one-size-fits-all. And so, yeah, we're very inconsistent with identifying this. However, that's also the nature of the student because there is unevenness. Development is not perfect. It is sequential, chronological, but it isn't always even and predictable. So she brings up a very good point. And again, I think the judge wants the DPI to be able to provide the specific guidelines on how to identify those because certainly some can cancel each other out. A child that can't read but is very, very gifted is not likely to be easily identified. Some will, but not in some if it's just a standardized test. So there need to be multiple ways to identify, and again, consistent multiple ways across the state.
Angie, thank you for the call. Susan in Markazan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to say one thing about the last comment that gets made. I was one of those kids that had a lot of trouble learning to read, and I think that the shame that gave me made me an underachiever because I always did well on the testing, but I just didn't learn like other people. And I'm wondering if he has heard of the program Destination Imagination and the concept of creative problem solving, where up to seven kids are on a team. And this is a competitive thing, but I just think that some of the principles of that program could be put to use in every classroom. Mm. Our school has been...
This is not a gifted and talented program?
When we had a gifted and talented program in Markazan, our teacher made it a pretty strong part of her program, mm-hmm. but it's totally extracurricular.
Yeah. Destination Imagination,
yes,
Professor Correa?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm real familiar with the DI program. Mm-hmm. It's really wonderful. And the teachers that gravitate to those are the ones that any listener will say, that's the one I want my child to have. These are motivated people that love to work with students that are excited. It incubates divergent thinking, being able to think multiple ways, not convergent, everybody thinking the same way. Very student-centered, very motivating. It's, again, one of those, though, I think it's really neat what the caller said, that it became part of the traditional or almost traditional classroom program because this is good teaching. It is student-centered. It's great to be able to do. It's sort of like National History Day. It's an established program around the nation that is very well respected. And again, it gets students. The students find something that they like. They work in teams. They problem solve. It's really a good, good program, and it's fun. And again, it's student motivation. It's not here are exact declarative level things to know. And boy, students just love to be a part of it, and who doesn't want to teach people like that? Mm-hmm. However, it's not just for gifted and talented students. They do, though, gravitate to that because the really good ones with parental or guidance support are looking for opportunities to be able to express themselves and be able to showcase some of their skills and talents.
Thank you, Susan. Kate in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. My thought is that I think it might benefit everyone if they brought back funding for French, German, FIED, and art programs rather than just the the few that are gifted and talented.
A reaction, Professor Correa.
Boy, who can have any problem with learning wonderful foreign language skills? And yeah, we're in an interesting world where I think it's a little cruel to blame all of this on No Child Left Behind. But what I will say is that districts have limited resources, and this is the one that's on the front burner, the top of the list, whatever metaphor we want to use. And so districts are saying, okay, we've got to get No Child Left Behind in line. Now, what do we have left? And I think districts will do that. Some do the after-school language programs. I think they're exceptionally strong. But I do like what the caller said, this idea that maybe we can benefit everybody. And I think sometimes that there's a good argument that can be made for that. Keeping in mind, though, again, gifted and talented parents tend to be very connected, and they are going to be strong advocates, as we all should be, for their children. It's just that oftentimes the other children don't have the strength of the advocates for them.
We appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us.
You are welcome.
Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking with us about this court ruling on Friday, a Dane County judge ordering the DPI to come up with specific ways for local school districts to identify gifted and talented students. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.